I think as Gina has said, clearly we have had enormous success with our pediatric immunization rates. And where we have not done so well, obviously, has been with our adult immunization rates. What I'd like to spend some time today is, since we were given this mantra that nothing matters, and what would you do if you could boost adult immunizations in both public and private sectors, I therefore have to put up this disclaimer that the opinions that I express in this presentation are solely that of me, and they do not necessarily represent the official position of the American Medical Association. So I think in order to move on to the other speakers, I'm going to go ahead and tell you a little bit about why we're worried about adult immunization. And I think most of you have now heard this. Our adult immunization rates are really poor. If you look at the National Immunization Survey that the CDC just announced this year, only 69 and 66% respectively in influenza and pneumococcal rates are, those are the rates we have in those over 65, bearing in mind that our Healthy People 2010 goals for these populations, for these two vaccines, are at 90%. 2% of those over 60 years that are eligible for Zostervax are actually vaccinated. 2% of those between 18 and 64 years are actually vaccinated for Tdap. And only 44% of those over 65 years are vaccinated against tetanus. And of course, while this is a new vaccine, and hopefully this figure will continue to increase, only 10% of women between the ages of 18 and 26 are vaccinated for HPV. So we need a reminder about the morbidity and the mortality that are due to adult vaccine-preventable diseases in the United States. And on a conservative side, I think about, you can estimate, looking at literature, about 50,000 adults probably die annually from vaccine-preventable diseases. And this combines pneumococcal disease, influenza, and hepatitis B, and does not include some of the other vaccine-preventable diseases as well. Hundreds of thousands more are hospitalized, and clearly there's a significant cost burden to the U.S. economy. If you look at influenza alone, if we vaccinated, if for every person that you vaccinate, there can be an annual direct and indirect savings of about $13.66. And 78% of all the costs provided are actually from lost work productivity. If you cite an old government study from the 1990s, influenza is attributed, about $5 billion of economic loss is attributed annually to influenza every year. So how do we go about improving adult immunization rates? And if I had all day and all morning, and I may, but you may not, I could talk about all these issues, and I think we'd have a really stimulating conversation. But I am here to talk about the point that I've highlighted here at the bottom in red, which is what I would call complementary healthcare providers or complementary healthcare settings. Clearly, the first three bullets are all extremely important to improving adult immunization rates. You need to increase provider awareness. You need to increase public awareness. You need to improve our adult vaccine financing system, as well as the infrastructure to deliver the adult vaccines. And I'm clearly, there's a cry out that there's no vaccines for children, similar-like program for adults. And finally, of course, the improved access to vaccines. We have our traditional healthcare providers, and then, of course, we have those we call the complementary healthcare settings. So what exactly are these complementary healthcare immunization settings? We have always called them the non-traditional immunization sites. But my position is that if you want to bring them into the mainstream, we should start calling them something a little more mainstream and maybe call them complementary sites because they actually complement the primary care setting. If you look at the CDC BRFSS in 2006, you'll find that in that survey, a lot of Americans, adult Americans, report not having a personal health care provider. And so clearly for these Americans, accessing adult vaccines requires that they go, or may require that they go to an alternative setting. And so these settings tend to be, for example, in schools, community centers, churches, stores. And in fact, because of the fact that it is the American adult that has less of what we would call a traditional medical home, complementary immunization settings have predominantly applied to adult immunizations. And again, this is because 80% of pediatric vaccinations do occur in primary care. However, that being said, as we move forward, I think it is important to keep in mind that these complementary sites may be useful in reaching, for example, children that have poor access to primary care because of maybe ethnic or socioeconomic reasons. And with the new ACIP influenza recommendations, I think these complementary settings will become critical in implementing these new influenza recommendations for children up to the age of 18 years. So what are the benefits of using some of these complementary immunization settings? Well, as I've already suggested, it improves access for adults that are unable to reach a primary care provider. It eliminates barriers of primary care, some of the complaints that you hear from the patients, such as having to make an appointment, sometimes the long wait times that might have occurred in order to get an appointment or in the waiting rooms. And therefore, by making it more convenient, it may be possible to increase access. There's data that shows that the complementary immunization settings provide immunizations at generally lower cost than the traditional primary care settings. And of course, this increases access for those who are unwilling to pay and perhaps the uninsured. I think what's really important for complementary immunization setting is that it gets immunizations out there. It increases the opportunities for us to increase the public awareness that these vaccines are available, they are important, and you need to be thinking about getting them. And I think on the other side, if complementary settings truly complement the traditional primary care setting, there can be many opportunities to build new alliances, partnerships to improve immunization rates, but not just that, but preventive care in general. Imagine a scenario where a complementary setting, after providing influenza immunization, follows up. Do you have a primary care provider? If not, here's a list of some primary care providers in your neighborhood that you should consider seeing for the following preventive care visits that you need. I think all those are opportunities that we can build upon. So in terms of access, there's a lot of data that shows that when you allow or when you have complementary sightings, immunization rates increase. So this is a study that was published in 2004 that looked at influenza vaccination rate in 8 states that allowed pharmacists to vaccinate after 1997. So you know you have 2 time frames. You have the 1995, 1997, pharmacists were allowed to vaccinate in these 8 states, and then you looked back at the 1999. And you can see that states that allow pharmacists to vaccinate showed a much more significant increase in the immunization rates for the elderly than the states that did not allow pharmacists to vaccinate. So clearly, complementary sites, such as, for example, using pharmacists, improves immunization rates. And this slide summarizes some data that shows that it is cost effective. I think you can look through the slide yourself. In the interest of time, what I'm going to do is just highlight the conclusion. That is, using non-traditional settings or complementary sites to deliver routine influenza immunizations to adults is likely to be cost savings for healthy adults aged 50 to 64 years and relatively cost effective for healthy adults between the ages of 18 and 49 years of age. However, in order to increase access and use of complementary sites, I think we need to manage the challenges. And I've highlighted 4 challenges here that I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking about. Firstly, standards of care, and we hear a lot about this. Can they manage adverse reactions? How do you account for continuity of care? How do you do record keeping? Influenza is less of an issue with respect to record keeping. It's an annual vaccine, but I think when you start moving to some of the other adult vaccines, I think this becomes a major barrier that people need to think about. Legislative barriers, and this predominantly lies in liability. And then the final 2, while they're kind of related to complementary sites, they're also very related to immunizations in general. Public motivation to seek vaccination. I think that is something that we need to all work upon, because I think the public needs to realize that they have vaccines that they need to get, and they need to be motivated to go get those vaccines. So having complementary sites available, but the public not willing to go there, it's not very effective. And finally, I think we need to continue to work on improving those partnerships and alliances between primary care and these complementary sites. So what that boils down to is basically improving acceptance by the so-called traditional primary care providers. So in terms of standards of care, I think there are standards from both the National Vaccine Advisory Committee as well as the AMA with regards to these complementary sites. And these standards actually are very detailed, and they go through things such as the ability to assess your patient for contraindications and to deal for adverse events, proper storage and handling of the vaccines, appropriate record keeping, reporting, and this could be documentation of the actual vaccine being given, the use of electronic health records would be a phenomenal boon. And of course, reporting to the registry, the state's registry. Adherence to regulatory standards. In this issue, you think about privacy challenges such as HIPAA. And of course, adhering to evidence-based guidelines and educating the patient on the risks and benefits of vaccines. And of course, as I mentioned earlier, patients should be encouraged to see their primary care physician for other preventive care measures to improve that continuity of care that we always hear people talk about. And just as I put this slide up here to show you that pharmacists in complementary settings actually receive very significant training to ensure that they're able to meet these standards of care that we put up earlier. And I think as you can see here, there's a lot of, there's 2 hours of continuing education units for these programs. This program is recognized by the CDC. And so I think this is an example of the training that does go into the providers in compulsory settings. So I think we can, so hopefully as we continue to move towards that and we show people this is happening, the issues with standard of care will begin to subside a little bit. With legislative barriers, I think what we're talking about is a couple of things. First, not all states authorize non-traditional or complementary providers to immunize. I think we see that is changing. And then with respect to liability, obviously complementary sites have the same liability concerns that traditional primary providers have. But this is also changing and the concerns are becoming much reduced. And where there are concerns, you can always use nurses, nurse practitioners, physicians and others to continue to administer vaccines in complementary settings as you work through these barriers, these regulatory legal barriers. And of course, pharmacists remain a very important partner in the complementary setting. In fact, it is very interesting to note that currently, actually this number is now wrong because this was changed just this week. There are actually now 48 states that currently authorize pharmacists to administer immunizations. West Virginia this week passed legislation that would allow pharmacists to vaccinate. So leaving only two states where pharmacists cannot immunize, and that's Maine and New York. Again, as you can see, this trend is changing. The acceptance of complementary settings is beginning to change. The number of states authorizing pharmacists to immunize has continued to grow, and I think that's a good trend for the use of complementary sites. So specific to the issue of increasing public demand for adult vaccines, and I think this is a more general topic, although obviously complementary settings have a very important role in this, what we can do is we can try to figure ways to use complementary settings to target those who cannot access vaccines easily. I think that is one of the primary roles the primary complementary settings can provide. For example, the ethnic populations. You can use settings such as religious gatherings, YMCAs, to access those populations. The economically disadvantaged, community centers, homeless shelters, battered women shelters are all great sites to provide immunizations. And as you do this, you have to remember the locality and the region that you're working in. Securing important community role models to advocate for your programs as you go into these complementary settings is critical for success. You should also consider immunizations in the school settings. And I think this is especially relevant now that we have the new influenza recommendations to vaccinate all children up to the age of 18. And it is also obviously relevant to the HPV vaccine itself. It will help relieve already a stressed primary care system. And I think we need to secure immunizers to help implement these programs in these settings, in the school setting. As we already know, the school nurses are burdened, and we do not want to overly burden them by putting on this mandate to vaccinate. And I think when we start using complementary settings to vaccinate kids and children, I think we need to acknowledge that there are differences in immunizing adults versus children. I think this is something we need to think a little bit about. There are developmental and age considerations that you should be considering when you vaccinate a child versus an adult. For example, one of the big ones is providing some atraumatic care for children who are going to be very different from adults in the way they respond to the actual immunization itself in terms of psychologically. And then finally, when you talk about complementary settings, I think this ability to pay pops up not just there, but also in traditional healthcare settings. And you start thinking about what about the role of occupational settings, workplaces for immunizations? Can employers step up and pay for some of these vaccines? And what about improved insurance coverage for some of the adult vaccines that we keep talking about? And as we do this, obviously, I think all of you have heard this, I'm probably repeating a lot of things that you've already heard here, we need to continue to use culturally appropriate and location-targeted messages to increase awareness of adult vaccines. And these are three examples that we've seen from studies. So for example, lack of knowledge and negative attitudes keep many African-American adults from seeking vaccinations. So you need to use messages that are very specific to that theme. And on the other hand, limited access to healthcare is a major impediment for the Latino population. And so that's the other side of the coin. One message does not fit all. And then the most challenging Asian American populations tend to be recent immigrants who are not well assimilated into the American culture. And so again, as we go forth into complementary settings, we need to remember that since they are going to be local, they need to think locally as well. And finally, I'm going to wrap up with a few slides here about how we go about improving acceptance by primary care. I think what we need to recognize is that the primary care provider typically will have the first chance to immunize the patient. And what complementary settings do, and it's a very important role, is catch those who slip through. And I think complementary settings then serve to be this very visible reminder to the public on the importance of adult vaccines. And the public can then choose to go to a primary care setting and get vaccinated, or if they don't have access, they can now see that they can get their vaccines at a complementary set. You know, and in fact, as an example, I think it's clear to see that influenza has been a classic role, has a classic vaccine where complementary sites are already in play. As you can see, about 39 to 45%, depending on the year you look at, of influenza vaccines are received by adults in the primary care traditional setting. But you can see that 50% to 60% of influenza vaccine are administered in a very diverse diverse pool of complementary sites. So hopefully, as we continue to move forward on this, I think we'll begin to see more use of complementary sites. And as that happens, I think what it does is that it's a rising tide. As more and more people seek vaccinations, hear about vaccinations, and get vaccinated, I think this increased public awareness will increase immunization rates for all providers, not just the complementary providers, but the traditional primary care providers as well. And I think I want to leave you with this thought about what will it take for us if we truly can get to where we want to be, and that is immunizing the rates that we want to see for adult vaccines, for HPV, for influenza, for pneumococcal. If, for example, if we have a crisis such as pandemic influenza, if we have a universal recommendation to immunize all adults with a specific vaccine, do we want to see lines like this to get the vaccine, or do we want to be prepared today because we're moving into complementary sites and we're taking advantage of these locations so that we can maximize the administration of all our vaccines at all locations? And I leave you with that little thought. Thank you very much for your attention.